Chapter 4. The painter had been gone only a day or two when, while sitting upstairs alone one morning, she glanced over the London paper just arrived, and read the following paragraph. Suicide of a poet, apostrophe Mr. Robert Drew, who has been favorably known for some years as one of our rising lyrists, committed suicide at his lodgings at Silencia on Saturday evening last, by shooting himself in the right temple with a revolver. Readers hardly need to be reminded that Mr. Drew has recently attracted the attention of a much wider public than had hitherto known him, by his new volume of verse, mostly of an impassioned kind, entitled Lyrics to a Woman Unknown, which has been already favorably noticed in these pages for the extraordinary gamut of feeling it traverses, and which has been made the subject of a severe, if not ferocious, criticism in the review. It is supposed, though not certainly known, that the article may have partially conduced to the sad act, as a copy of the review in question was found on his writing table, and he has been observed to be in a somewhat depressed state of mind since the critique appeared. Apostrophe, apostrophe, then came the report of the inquest, at which the following letter was read, it having been addressed to a friend at a distance. Dear, before these lines reach your hands I shall be delivered from the inconveniences of seeing, hearing, and knowing more of the things around me. I will not trouble you by giving my reasons for the step I have taken, though I can assure you they were sound and logical. Perhaps had I been blessed with a mother, or a sister, or a female friend of another sort tenderly devoted to me, I might have thought it worth while to continue my present existence. I have long dreamt of such an unattainable creature, as you know, and she, this undiscoverable elusive one, inspired my last volume, The Imaginary Woman Alone, for, in spite of what has been said in some quarters, there is no real woman behind the title. As he has continued to the last unrevealed, unmet, unwon. I think it desirable to mention this in order that no blame may attach to any real woman as having been the cause of my decease by cruel or cavalier treatment of me. Tell my landlady that I am sorry to have caused her this unpleasantness, but my occupancy of the rooms will soon be forgotten. There are ample funds in my name at the bank to pay all expenses. R. Drew. Apostrophe, Ella sat for a while as if stunned, then rushed into the adjoining chamber, and flung herself upon her face on the bed. Her grief and distraction shook her to pieces, and she lay in this frenzy of sorrow for more than an hour. Broken words came every now and then from her quivering lips. Oh, if he had only known of me, me. Dot 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 oh, if I had only once met him only once. And put my hand upon his hot forehead, kissed him, let him know how I loved him, that I would have suffered shame and scorn, would have lived and died, for him. Perhaps it would have saved his dear life. Dot dot dot, but no, it was not allowed. God is a jealous God, and that happiness was not for him and me. Apostrophe, apostrophe, all possibilities were over, the meeting was stultified. Yet it was almost visible to her in her fantasy even now, though it could never be substantiated, the hour which might have been, yet might not be, which man's and woman's heart conceived and bore, yet whereof life was barren. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she wrote to the landlady at Silencia in the third person, in as subdued a style as she could command, enclosing a postal order for a sovereign, and informing Mrs. Hooper that Mrs. Marchmill had seen in the papers the sad account of the poet's death, and having been, as Mrs. Hooper was aware, much interested in Mr. Drew during her stay at Cobourg House, she would be obliged, if Mrs. Hooper could obtain a small portion of his hair before his coffin was closed down, and send it her as a memorial of him, as also the photograph that was in the frame. By the return post a letter arrived containing what had been requested. Ella wept over the portrait, and secured it in her private drawer. The lock of hair she tied with white ribbon and put in her bosom, whence she drew it, and kissed it every now, and then in some unobserved nook. What's the matter? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said her husband, looking up from his newspaper on one of these occasions. crying over something? A lock of hair? Whose is it? Apostrophe, apostrophe, he's dead. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she murmured. Who? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I don't want to tell you, Will, just now, unless you insist. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she said, a sob hanging heavy in her voice. Oh, all right. Apostrophe, apostrophe, do you mind my refusing? I will tell you someday. Apostrophe, it doesn't matter in the least, of course. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he walked away whistling a few bars of no tune in particular. And when he had got down to his factory in the city, the subject came into Marchmill's head again. He, too, was aware that a suicide had taken place recently at the house they had occupied at Silencia. Having seen the volume of poems in his wife's hand of late, and heard fragments of the landlady's conversation about True, when they were her tenants, he all at once said to himself, "Why, of course it's he. How the devil did she get to know him? What sly animals women are!" Apostrophe, then he placidly dismissed the matter, and went on with his daily affairs. By this time Ella at home had come to a determination. Mrs. Hooper, in sending the hair and photograph, had informed her of the day of the funeral, and as the morning and noon wore on, an overpowering wish to know where they were laying him took possession of the sympathetic woman. Caring very little now what her husband or anyone else might think of her eccentricities, she wrote Marchmill a brief note, stating that she was called away for the afternoon and evening, but would return on the following morning. This she left on his desk, and having given the same information to the servants, went out of the house on foot. When Mr. Marchmill reached home early in the afternoon, the servants looked anxious. The nurse took him privately aside, and hinted that her mistress's sadness during the past few days had been such that she feared as he had gone out to drown herself. Marchmill reflected. Upon the whole, he thought that as he had not done that. Without saying whither he was bound, he also started off, telling them not to sit up for him. He drove to the railway station, and took a ticket for Silencia. It was dark when he reached the place, though he had come by a fast train, and he knew that, if his wife had preceded him thither, it could only have been by a slower train, arriving not a great while before his own. The season at Silencia was now past. The parade was gloomy, and the flies were few and cheap. He asked the way to the cemetery, and soon reached it. The gate was locked, but the keeper let him in, declaring, however, that there was nobody within the precincts. Although it was not late, the autumnal darkness had now become intense, and he found some difficulty in keeping to the serpentine path which led to the quarter where, as the man had told him, the one or two interments for the day had taken place. He stepped upon the grass, and, stumbling over some pegs, stooped now and then to discern, if possible, a figure against the sky. He could see none, but lighting on a spot where the soil was trodden, beheld a crouching object beside a newly made grave. She heard him, and sprang up. "L, how silly this is!" Apostrophe, apostrophe, he said indignantly. "Running away from home, I never heard such a thing. Of course I am not jealous of this unfortunate man, but it is too ridiculous that you, a married woman with three children and a forthcoming, should go losing your head like this over a dead lover. ... Do you know you were locked in? You might not have been able to get out all night." Apostrophe, she did not answer. "I hope it didn't go far between you and him, for your own sake." Apostrophe, apostrophe, don't insult me, Will. Apostrophe, apostrophe, mind, I won't have any more of this sort of thing, do you hear? Apostrophe, apostrophe, very well, apostrophe, she said. He drew her arm within his own, and conducted her out of the cemetery. It was impossible to get back that night, and not wishing to be recognized in their present sorry condition, he took her to a miserable little coffee house close to the station, whence they departed early in the morning, traveling almost without speaking, under the sense that it was one of those dreary situations occurring in married life which words could not mend, and reaching their own door at noon. The months passed, and neither of the twain ever ventured to start a conversation upon this episode. Ella seemed to be only too frequently in a sad and listless mood, which might almost have been called pining. The time was approaching when she would have to undergo the stress of childbirth for a fourth time, and that apparently did not tend to raise her spirits. "I don't think I shall get over it this time," " she said one day. "Pooh! What childish foreboding! Why shouldn't it be as well now as ever?" " she shook her head. "I feel almost sure I am going to die, and I should be glad, if it were not for Nelly, and Frank, and Tiny. And me. You'll soon find somebody to fill my place," she murmured, with a sad smile. "And you'll have a perfect right to, I assure you of that. L, you are not thinking still about that poetical friend of yours?" She neither admitted, nor denied the charge. "I am not going to get over my illness this time," she reiterated. "Something tells me I shan't." This view of things was rather a bad beginning, as it usually is. And, in fact, 6 weeks later, in the month of May, she was lying in her room, pulseless and bloodless, with hardly strength enough left to follow up one feeble breath with another, the infant for whose unnecessary life she was slowly parting with her own being fat and well. Just before her death she spoke to Marchmill softly. "Will, I want to confess to you the entire circumstances of that about you know what that time we visited Silencia. I can't tell what possessed me, how I could forget you so, my husband. But I had got into a morbid state. I thought you had been unkind, that you had neglected me, that you weren't up to my intellectual level, while he was, and far above it. I wanted a fuller appreciator, perhaps, rather than another lover." She could get no further than for very exhaustion, and she went off in sudden collapse a few hours later, without having said anything more to her husband on the subject of her love for the poet. William Marchmill, in truth, like most husbands of several years' standing, was little disturbed by retrospective jealousies, and had not shown the least anxiety to press her for confessions concerning a man dead, and gone beyond any power of inconveniencing him more. But when as he had been buried a couple of years it chanced one day that, in turning over some forgotten papers that he wished to destroy before his second wife entered the house, he lighted on the lock of hair in an envelope, with the photograph of the deceased poet, a date being written on the back in his late wife's hand. It was that of the time they spent at Silencia. Marchmill looked long and musingly at the hair and portrait, for something struck him. Fetching the little boy who had been the death of his mother, now a noisy toddler, he took him on his knee, held the lock of hair against the child's head, and set up the photograph on the table behind, so that he could closely compare the features each countenance presented. There were undoubtedly strong traces of resemblance. The dreamy and peculiar expression of the poet's face sat, as the transmitted idea, upon the child's, and the hair was of the same hue. "I'm damned if I didn't think so," murmured Marchmill. "Then she did play me false with that fellow at the lodgings. Let me see. The date's the second week in August. The third week in May. Yes. Get away, you poor little brat. You are nothing to me." 1893. The three strangers, among the few features of agricultural England which retain an appearance, but little modified by the lapse of centuries, may be reckoned the high, grassy and furzy downs, coombs, or ewelisses, as they are indifferently called, that fill a large area of certain counties, in the south and southwest. If any mark of human occupation is met with hereon, it usually takes the form of the solitary cottage of some shepherd. 50 years ago such a lonely cottage stood on such a down, and may possibly be standing there now. In spite of its loneliness, however, the spot, by actual measurement, was not more than 5 miles from a county town. Yet that affected it little. 5 miles of irregular upland, during the long inimical seasons, with their sleets, snows, rains, and mists, afford withdrawing space enough to isolate a time in a Nebuchadnezzar, much less, in fair weather, to please that less repellent tribe, the poets, philosophers, artists, and others who conceive and meditate of pleasant things. Some old earthen camp or barrow, some clump of trees, at least some starved fragment of ancient hedge is usually taken advantage of in the erection of these forlorn dwellings. But, in the present case, such a kind of shelter had been disregarded. Higher crow stairs, as the house was called, stood quite detached and undefended. The only reason for its precise situation seemed to be the crossing of two footpaths at right angles hard by, which may have crossed there, and thus for a good 500 years. Hence the house was exposed to the elements on all sides. But, though the wind up here blew unmistakably when it did blow, and the rain hit hard whenever it fell, the various weathers of the winter season were not quite so formidable on the coombe as they were imagined to be by dwellers on low ground. The raw rimes were not so pernicious as in the hollows, and the frosts were scarcely so severe. When the shepherd and his family who tenanted the house were pitied for their sufferings from the exposure, they said that upon the whole they were less inconvenienced by wuzzes and flames, horses and phlegms, than when they had lived by the stream of a snug neighboring valley. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.